Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
By now, many of us have heard the basic recommendations for stopping the spread of the coronavirus. Wash your hands, wear a mask, and stay 6 feet away from others. These basic recommendations have become staples of public service announcements from national and state governments, as well as healthcare companies.
I wear a mask because I can't, but my baby can't. Do it for their futures.
Even though there is so much against us.
You will see me choose to protect myself and my community from the coronavirus by wearing a face covering.
Because it's going to take all of us thinking about one another.
And even with my face covered, you will see me.
But as COVID-19 continues to spike through the winter, my next guest says these tame ads aren't doing enough. And she says that public service announcements about the virus need to be more graphic in depicting the reality of the coronavirus and maybe even instill some fear in us. She wrote about this in an op-ed last week in the New York Times. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. Elizabeth Rosenthal is the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, a former emergency room physician, and author of An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Elizabeth, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Good to be back, Tanzina.
You wrote a piece in the New York Times where you make the case for trying fear-based messaging around COVID-19. Why do you think that that's the case, and what do you mean?
Well, first of all, I don't think fear is the right word. I mean, in the social sciences, they talk about these ads as fear-based, but I think of them as reality-based ads. And the reason I say this is because I look at all these PSAs, public service ads, and or announcements, and they're all kind of, you said tame, I kind of think of them as lame. They're exhortational, they're cute. They're the kind of ads I usually associate with, like, you know, pooper scooper or don't spread your legs on the subway. But, you know, we have a serious pandemic going, and I think the reality of getting a bad case of COVID is ugly, it's scary, and people should be reacting to that. And when people tell me, oh, well, studies are mixed on whether fear-based ads work, I say, look, we've been trying these cute ads for 8 months now, and it's not working in many parts of the country. So time to step up our game. Or to change our strategy.
One of the things you talk about in your piece is the use of ventilators and how I think, and we've been, you know, in preparing for this conversation, we on the show, we're talking a little bit about how Americans really understand a ventilator, what the process is like and what it's really like. And tell us a little bit about what it's really like. And do you think showing something like that to Americans would change their minds?
Well, it's hard to watch is the problem. And, you know, in this day and age of, you know, kind of, you know, trigger warnings, it's ugly. It's hard for children. You kind of don't want children to see it. But it is the reality. It's, you know, when I was a medical resident and we had to put people on ventilators, we kind of, you know, in the kind of black humor of residency, we called it torturing people. Not because it isn't a good thing. If you're likely to need it and if it will help, it's great. They're fabulous technology, but it's really uncomfortable. You can't talk. You've got a tube down your throat. You're gagging. You're fighting the ventilator. And, you know, part of the problem is many people know people now who've had mild cases of COVID, but the people who've had the bad cases are in intensive care units or they're isolated or in their homes because they're too out of breath to go out. And we don't see enough of those people. There's, to me, this odd dichotomy. We see those bad cases on the news on some stations, but we don't see them in public service ads. So the public service ads are kind of playing nice and exhortational, you know, do it for your neighbor. And in TV, we're showing, wow, this can be really bad, but we've got to kind of merge those two thoughts.
You mentioned also in your piece, and I remember a lot of these ads when I was a kid, the stop smoking adverts that and messages that many of us saw as children that were pretty graphic. It showed deformed faces and people who had lost parts of their bodies as a result of smoking. That did not prevent a lot of people from smoking. It was a different time, a different era, but I think that they're pretty effective as a former smoker myself. Is that the tack that you would take with these ads?
As of now, yes. I might not have said so 7-8 months ago, but I, like you, am from New York. I know how bad it was there. And, you know, you always hope that people will listen to do the right thing. But in many parts of the country, they're not. And the smoking ads, sure, not everyone stopped smoking, but between 1967 and 1970, when there was a very concerted campaign on TV at the time, smoking rates dropped by about 5%. And where they've been tried for smoking, they're very effective. Now, you know, you can find studies showing that fear-based ads are mostly effective for one-time interventions rather than prolonged behavior. Yes, that's true. But I would say, and as a former smoker, you know, stopping smoking is really, really hard. So if an ad can make people stop smoking, it should be able to make people, like, just put on a face mask for, you know, the next 6 months while the vaccine kind of rolls out.
In theory, yes. And yet there are, you know, we've had very mixed messaging from the federal government on down, particularly at the federal government, in terms of the politicization of this virus, in terms of how masks themselves have become a political statement. Is it too late, Elizabeth, to try to come out with a new approach at this point, given where we are today?
I don't think so. And here I invoke, my hero in this, Dr. Fauci. You know, it's not too late. We can still do a lot. I mean, certainly the people who are saying this is a hoax, even as they're, you know, going into the ICU, I couldn't have COVID. You're never going to convince them. But I think there's a lot of the country that's kind of confused, in part because they've heard this mixed messaging from the White House and from some of the public service, public health people, in part because it's a new virus. We've been learning things about it over the last 8 months. And at the beginning, it didn't seem like masks made much of a difference. But very early on, we knew they did. So I think people are a little confused. There's a big part of the population that you could reach. And the thing is, if we go from 50% masking to 70% masking in a community, that will make a big difference in spread. If we go from 50% to 90%, that would make a huge difference. So I think, yes, sure, there are some people you're never going to convince. There are some people that are going to smoke until they get lung cancer. But there are a whole lot of people out there I think we can still reach with a new kind of public service announcement.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the memes that we're even seeing. I saw something, and even some journalism that's coming out that really sort of speaks to the opposite of what you're saying, which is let's meet people where they are. For example, if we know people aren't going to wear masks and we know they're not going to not travel for the holidays, then let's give them tips on how to do it as safely as possible. I have very mixed feelings about that. I think that that's somewhat irresponsible, but at the same time, you have people that say, look, you've got to meet people where they are, and we have to be realistic about what Americans are willing and not willing to do. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think it has to be either or. I don't object to some PSAs being kind of exhortational and saying to a 25-year-old who's going to fly, you know, this is the way to do it safely, or quarantine before you see your grandmother. I think you need that information too. But I do think you also need to show people what it looks like to be a COVID long hauler, what it looks like to be on a ventilator. I think almost the scarier part, because when you're on a ventilator, you're usually very sedated, is when you're lying in bed in an ICU, not quite needing a ventilator, but watching those oxygen saturation numbers rise and dip above your head, thinking, oh my gosh, where is this headed? I mean, that is terrifying. And, you know, I have a friend who's an infectious disease doctor at Tampa General. And she said, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, I have a cousin who had it. It's not so bad. You know, where masking is not prevalent at the moment. And yes, for many people, it will not be so bad. My son had COVID. He had a mild case. My mother had COVID. She died from it. So, you know, we have to express the range of possibilities and make it clear to people that you don't know, even if you're 25, whether you're going to have a really bad case or a mild case. And, you know, one of the PSAs I'd like to see is from an NFL football player who has a long-haul COVID syndrome, who is missing the season, you know, is short of breath when he, a really fit person previously, has to climb up the stairs. I mean, that's powerful.
What about in the world of journalism, Elizabeth, the world that you and I both are deeply familiar and committed to? Do journalists need to be more direct about the effects of particularly severe cases of COVID-19 and also just how they talk about it and how they we're going to have a conversation a little bit on the show about the images that they use? Where would you say, quote unquote, the media is on this so far?
Well, it's a little bit all over the map. I think the media has tried to show how bad COVID can get. I mean, we've certainly seen scenes within ICUs. We've had doctors and nurses in tears because they're trying to do their best. They're exhausted. You know, so we do see, particularly on television, on cable, on the internet, memes of how bad it can get. But, you know, the media in particular and how Americans digest the media at the moment is so affiliated with your political party. So those messages may not get to people who are looking primarily at the more right-leaning media who've kind of downplayed COVID or even said it's a hoax. So I think the media has tried its best. I mean, some of it is genuinely hard because it's hard to get reporters into an ICU, and you probably don't want them there kind of interfering with the desperate work that's being done. So, you know, I'm, you know, it's funny, one little thing we talked about is the photo that went with my story in the New York Times, my op-ed about how we have to scare people a little bit more. And again, it's reality show people, not scare people, was of an empty stretcher. I was like, that's a weird choice. Why don't we put someone on a vent in that time slot? So I think the media has tried its best and has done a pretty good job. But, you know, our electorate, our country is very polarized in what kind of media it chooses to believe. So
Elizabeth Rosenthal is editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News and author of An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jancina.